Welcome everyone to iAfrica Media, the biggest and number one podcast channel on the African continent for all things IK. I hope you're all keeping safe during the lockdowns. I know we are all frustrated as the IK industry, but we are entering a new world that we all need to navigate and find alternate ways in which we can all continue to grow forward in our industry. Today, I've got the awesome privilege of hanging out with Dr. Van Staden. How are you, Doc?
I'm good, thanks, Obi. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How have you been during these new times that we are all living in?
I've been good. I think my personality of sort of just taking everything in my stride helps to navigate this new normal that we are in, working from home, balancing the different demands of working from home, seeing the new opportunities that are emerging out of this time. So yes, I think being confined to the house can sometimes be frustrating, but I think we're in for positive change as we come out of this COVID-19 pandemic.
I like your perspective on things when you say discovering new opportunities, because I think as humanity, we have gone through so much over the years, and even this pandemic that we're all facing as a human race, I believe we will definitely overcome it going forward.
Most definitely.
Now, Dr. Van Staden, you are a public health practitioner, a researcher, an eye health professional experienced in health advocacy program development, program administration, as well as management. And you currently hold the title of academic leader at one of the optometry institutions in South Africa. Where did your passion for academia come from? let me ask it this way. Who is Dr. Van Staden?
I'm a simple, humble girl from a working class community in Durban in South Africa, who surprisingly actually, while performing very well throughout my schooling career, had no idea what I wanted to study when I had completed high school. And so I always say that optometry chose me. I didn't choose optometry. I almost inadvertently ended up in optometry.
Wow.
Through a very sort of, first I registered for a BSc in computer science, believe it or not, and I had never seen a computer in my life before I got to university.
Wow.
That didn't work out. I dropped out of university for 18 months and sort of was seeking what it is I wanted for my life, or where it was I felt I was strongest, or I could take my future. And I ended up registering for a BSc and did general BSc for 2 years, realized that I really wouldn't have a vocation at the end of my BSc, and was very concerned that I would not get a job just having a degree. I really wanted a profession where at the end of my degree I would sort of be called something, have a title that I could apply for a specific job. Believe it or not, that was my thoughts. And so I knew I was good at sort of sciences. In high school, I'd performed well in biology. So I thought, okay, health sciences, I wanted to work with people, help people. So I applied for all the health sciences.
Yes.
And optometry was the first one who gave me a spot. And because it was so hard to get into health sciences, I grabbed it with both hands. And at the time, all I knew about optometry was that it had something to do with eyes and glasses.
Sure.
So I went into it almost blindly. But today, you know, 25 odd years later, the profession has been very good to me. I love what I do. I found my purpose in it. You know, my journey has been somewhat convoluted and unconventional, but I believe that every experience in life grooms you for what is to come and prepares you for the next stage. And so you asked the question about sort of where did my passion for academia come from?
Yes.
In all honesty, I never ever saw myself as an academic. You know, I started my career as a private practicing optometrist, as most do. Or at least the time when I graduated, there weren't really any other options except to go into private practice. And I had a very short stint there, just under 4 years.
Really?
And while I enjoyed the, yes, it's 3 years and 9 months, I think, to be exact. And in those 3 years and 9 months, I had 2 different jobs, 2 very different experiences. The one was in a sort of a privately owned, smaller practice group, and the other one was in a bigger, more chain optometry group. So And I worked with like 5 optometrists in that second practice. So I had a rich practice experience. Yes. But all in all, I felt that something was missing. You know, you're servicing, to a large extent in private practice, you service that percentage of the population who doesn't really have vision problems. But, you know, they drain so much of your energy with your small prescriptions and all the issues they come in with. And I kept thinking to myself, gosh, I'm here having to be patient and deal with all of these things. And I know these people don't genuinely have, you know, eye problems, but there are people out there I know who've got significant eye problems and don't have access to eye care. I just had that sort of burning passion, I guess, to do something about this unmet eye care need. And believe it or not, I resigned from that very good job, that second job I had, and I loved it. But I knew I needed to pursue this calling almost, I would say. And I took a 3-month sabbatical, unemployed, just trying to figure out what to do with the rest of my life. How do I navigate my way towards meeting the needs of, you know, in our country, public sector dependent people. That's largely poor people who live in townships or rural communities who don't have access to eye care. So those, I took the time and then I thought public health would be my sort of stepping stone. I registered for a master's in public health. That didn't last beyond 6 months, mainly because I had moved from, it was very difficult, I must say, to start off with. But then I had moved provinces. So I was seeking this experience. And, you know, as I guess destiny would have it, I was put in contact with a Professor Kovan Naidu, who many people will know. He was actually the head of department when I was a final year optometry student. And then he was very keen on me and my interest in public health, and he tried to create opportunities for me. So he threw a ball into my court and he said, look, we've been speaking to the Free State government. They want to pilot optometry services. And remember, at this time, optometry didn't exist really in the public health sector in South Africa.
Correct.
And he said, I need someone who's willing to go there and do this. And I had no experience in where to start. But I was ready to take on the challenge because I was hungry for this new experience. I wanted to go and help people out there. And that's how my journey in public health started, public eye health started. And I did that project for 9 months. It was successful. At the same time, that was around 2003, 2004, the University of the Free State had just started an optometry program. And Professor Ramela at the time came and saw what we had done in the Eastern Free State. And he really liked our passion as young public sector optometrists. And he said, don't you want to come and work at the University of the Free State? We need people with this type of vision. And again, I had nothing else. Once the project was over, I didn't have a job. So I was ready to take on the next challenge. And that was my first entry into academia. And what I loved about it, as much as I didn't see myself at the time as an academic, that optometry school is based in a hospital serving public sector patients.
Yes.
And through my job, I had the opportunity to travel to other districts in the Free State. I remember setting up a clinic at Bongani Hospital, and one of our graduates from Free State went and was the first optometrist to work there serving public sector patients. And so I was meeting that need, that passion, that purpose I think I had, which was to grow this public sector optometry. And after 2 years at the University of the Free State, you know, then a global opportunity presented itself. And it was a big step for me. I thought long and hard about it. But again, it was something that would grow my career beyond South Africa's borders. So I moved on to that, working in development, establishing optometry programs and optometry schools in other parts of Africa. But I reached a point in my life where I had to make a personal decision. And so I was back in Durban, which is my hometown, working for this international development organization, loving my work.
Yes.
But very conscious that the NGO sector is fragile because it's so funding dependent. And I was at the stage of my life, I was ready to settle down, get married and have a family. And honestly, that was the first time I started thinking about myself, you know. And I would say that my decision to leave international eye health development and join UKZN was really the first time. My motive was not altruistic, it was personal. I was looking for stability, I was looking for sort of benefits and a job certainty and those sorts of things. And I must say, I battled for the first 2 years in academia. I felt I was out of purpose just teaching. You know, I knew there was more that I wanted to do, and I felt constrained within the university environment. And I really had to reflect on what it is that I want to do and how can I bring my passion and my purpose into my job. And I think once that light bulb went off and I found a way to marry my passion for public health and optometry development within the university context, that's when I sort of hit the sweet spot again. Sure. Other than that, I had seen it as two separate worlds. And I'm grateful that I was able to sort of merge those. And I've developed a love for academia now. I see how everything I've done to this point has prepared me for where I'm at and the influence that I have to make on the sector. You know, after when I was at University of the Free States, I pursued a master's. And after the master's, I said, I will never, ever do a PhD or any other form of studies again.
And look at you
it
now.
It was torturous. Yeah. So long and short, that's what I never planned a career in academia. I say optometry chose me, and to a large extent, maybe an academic career chose me, because where I am at now, I can shape and influence in some small way, you know, how the graduates we produce can now go on to growing optometry, wherever they may be based. You know, sorry for the long historical journey,
that's
been my journey.
I like that, because what I've picked up from what you're saying, it's like you started off in the private sector. You were not feeling or experiencing that which you wanted to experience. And then you gradually moved on to public health optometry and eventually landing up in academia. But what I'm picking up from all those examples is that wherever you were at, it might not be where you wanted to be, but you gave it your everything. It sounds like you ensured that the work that you were doing spoke for itself, and that you had a high work ethic, which I believe is something that a lot of people can learn from, especially young people who might not know exactly what role they want to play in IK, but wherever they may be placed at that given point in time, they still have the responsibility of ensuring that they are operating at the highest possible level of excellence.
Absolutely.
So that when that discovery happens as to exactly what it is that they want to be doing, the work ethic has already been at an advanced stage in their career. So I love the detailed summary of your journey, because I've already learned so much from it just by listening to you right now.
Wow. Awesome.
Now, the question then, you are with the Department of Optometry in KZN. There are four optometry schools in South Africa. Are the schools functioning on their own, or is there synergy amongst all four optometry departments in South Africa?
So I think by and large, the schools are functioning on their own, which, and I'll just bring in my personal opinion here, is that that's not ideal.
Okay.
So the way optometry training is regulated, I suppose, the Professional Board for Optometry, under the auspices of the Health Professions Council, they define the exit level outcomes of optometry training together with institutions. So they say an optometrist that graduates in South Africa must have the following, must be able to do A, B, C, or D. This is the type of competencies we expect them to have. But how that's articulated in the individual programs is really up to the institutions. So at different universities, programs are structured differently, run differently. And my experience, I've been at UKZN and I joined in 2011, so it's just sort of 9 years now, has been that, you know, there's been very little collaboration, sharing of experiences and ideas, and how can we do this better? How can we align our training better? Very little of that has happened up to, I would say, the past 1 or 2 years. I would say in the recent past, there's been more of a willingness to engage, a willingness to say we face common challenges. You know, how can we share ideas? How can we do this better? How can we ensure that an optometry graduate is an optometry graduate, regardless of which institution they trained at, they come up with the same competencies. And so there's a move in that direction, certainly still in its infancy stages, but I think the recent leadership has been more amenable to working together, that it's been less about exclusivity or institutional reputation or institutions wanting to retain some sort of defined expertise, and more about let's focus on what's good for the profession as a whole nationally. So, hope that gives you an edit. In my opinion, yes. Okay. In my opinion, I do believe that we have enough. If we were to, consider another optometry school, I would say either the Eastern Cape or the Western Cape would be best place to host it. If you look across the institutions, and I'm just giving a rough estimate now, we have just over 200 students in our cohort from first to fourth year, would say just short of 250 maybe. And that number is probably similar across most institutions except University of the Free State, which generally has rather small classes, on average about 20 to 25 per year. And so if you look at that 246, maybe we're producing 700-800 optometrists a year. I think that if those optometrists are appropriately placed, where the need is, we need to move away from optometrists just being congested in certain defined geographical areas, whether that's public. We find the same in public sector or private sector. Some districts in the public health sector have, five optometrists and other districts have none. Sure. So it's the issue of maldistribution. It's a bit tragic when you go into CBDs or even malls sometimes, and literally every few meters there's another practice, and each practice is struggling to survive. They're looking for feet in the door. So I think if we can address the issue of maldistribution, then we will have practitioners appropriately placed to meet the needs of our population. But in terms of whether the numbers we're producing are adequate, in my opinion, yes.
The question then that I have is the current scope, because I hear you that you're saying that we've got enough schools and we've got enough optometrists. Would you say that the current scope that is existing in optometry is sufficient for the type of eye care challenges that we are having in our country?
So where universities are training to now, or training the scope that they're training at, is at diagnostic level. It's been gazetted that the scope of practice for optometrists be increased to include therapeutics, but that requires that all existing or currently practicing optometrists need to have postgraduate certification to do that. And it's not yet been fully incorporated into the undergraduate training program. That's something that our Professions Council has been working with institutions on for the past 2 years or so, is how do we redesign the undergraduate program to include therapeutics. So if you look at it from a diagnostic perspective, I would say that not fully. Because what we've seen, I know some of our staff at least have done some research that shows that even though we're training to diagnostic level, in reality, very few practitioners out there are practicing at diagnostic level. Wow. We've advocated for optometrists to do more diagnostics and, of course, therapeutics, because the evidence is clear. There's not enough ophthalmologists to treat the burden of eye disease in our country. So if we can capacitate optometrists, we have the numbers, if they're adequately trained and skilled to be able to diagnose and treat basic anterior segment conditions, we'll reduce a significant burden of eye disease and visual impairment in our country. So that remains our position. But I think it's also for practitioners who graduate. Remember, training institutions have been training up to diagnostic level since the early 2000s. Yeah. So that's almost 20 years. And in these 20 years, a very small percentage of practitioners have gone on to actively practice diagnostics, in the real world. It's not public sector or private sector, it's both for different reasons. So I think more work needs to be done to encourage optometrists in practice to practice through their diagnostic scope, to do dilated fundus exams, to do cycloplegic refractions, all those things they're trained to do, contact tonometry, so that it also changes the face of the profession as not just one that's, you know, selling spectacles or contact lenses, this commercial picture only, but that we are a clinical profession and we have an important role to play, not just in eye health, but in healthcare in general. So I think yes, but it's underutilized in terms of the scope. And certainly when we get enough people to therapeutics, then we'll make more of a significant impact. Again, provided that people actually go and practice therapeutics when they're out there.
Now, Dr. van Staden, if I take my personal experience into account, when I was at university, about to leave and go into the working environment, the thing that stood out the most for me personally was the contact lens side of it. And if I look at the reasons behind it, throughout the academic year, contact lens companies come to the university more often as compared to the other companies. The contact lens lectures get given, or I felt that they were given a lot of time with the students, and there were not a lot of students, for example, that felt like, I'm going to go into low vision, I'm going to go into more focus on pediatrics or binocular vision. Do you find that that is still sort of like a challenge, where, that we don't have enough students looking at the different competencies of optometry whilst they're still studying and seeing the opportunities and the need for more practitioners to get involved in those other competencies outside of contact lenses? Because you have detailed the need for diagnostics, but I also feel like there's so much that we're lagging behind as an industry, and it starts from the departments already that we don't sort of like.
Yes.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And, you know, a lot of people thought I was crazy. As academic leader, I would still retain a percentage of teaching, even though it really sort of took the life out of me also, because these administrative positions are so, you know, so busy. Yeah. But the reason I retained teaching, and specifically teaching in two courses, the one was first year, Introduction to Optometry, and the other one, although I didn't teach this year, but I have up until last year been involved in optometric management.
Yes.
And was really to speak that message, is that there are so many areas of practice in optometry that are underexplored. To encourage students from year one to start thinking about, as they exposed more and more to the different facets of optometry practice, find your passion, find your niche. You know, the one thing that can set you apart when you're out there is if you have a focused area of expertise. And I must say, that's something I also, in my young naivety as a junior optometrist just graduating, I always said to myself, the thing that led me to take on these unconventional jobs that were short-lived in many instances was that I always said, I want to be set apart. You know, I want something different from the average optometrist. I don't want to follow the conventional path of just getting a job and working as a practicing optometrist for the rest of my life. So I always sought something to set me apart. And so that's the message I still sort of preach to our students, is that, you know, find it. If you enjoy children, make pediatric vision your passion. There's so few, low vision is the same thing, is to demystify, you know, the practices around these things. Everybody sort of just goes as a horde into this one model of practicing general optometry, at least 90% of graduates do. But I said, make yourself different. Do you enjoy sports? Find a way to carve yourself out as, you know, a practitioner with an interest in sports vision or occupational vision or environmental vision or something like that. So yes, it's something I fully agree with you. I feel passionate about, and I continue to speak that message to students. What I find though is that beyond academics and sometimes the clinicians our students may be exposed to when they go to the hospitals, they don't have role models, practicing role models out there in private practice or whether it's in the public health sector, to come and give their real life experience. And that's something I've been trying to pursue for the past year. I've recognized that we need to identify, you know, clinicians in their practices who are really good. They're doing fantastic stuff, whether it's with scleral lenses, whether it's with pediatric practice or children with learning disabilities, is to get those people in, because I think that's where students' energy will be sparked. They can see that this is possible in real life. If this person could do it, I can do it too. And so I think that's a gap that exists, that, you know, practitioners who have developed special interests in these underexplored areas of practice need to engage more with institutions, because academics, we have very little time to still do private practice work. And they see us as teachers, but they need to see the real life practicing optometrists out there who are the true role models, because that's where they're going to go.
I like how you have already sort of like emphasized the importance that the eye care professionals need to be playing when it comes to the academia. Do you find that there's not enough interest though in academia from an eye care perspective by optometrists?
There hasn't been, but I must say in recent years, you know, less than 5 years, I would say the past 3 years or so, yes. 2 to 3 years, I have increasingly found that people are more keen. They're showing more interest. They're coming to ask about postgraduate studies because they want to work towards a career in academia. So I think, I don't know whether that's because of the private practice constraints or whether they fed up with the public sector. I'm not sure what the motives are. In fact, I think one of our academics is doing a study on that now to see what is the motive of private practitioners to want to pursue postgraduate study. Because anecdotally, we found that some are now more interested in academia. But previously, no. I think once most people graduated with their B.Optom, that was it. They didn't want to see a university. They didn't see themselves as academic, that sort of typified, you know, old white professor, or, you know, not that it's about race, but that was our perception of people in universities or professors or academics. There was the stereotypical person. And so they didn't see themselves, you know, as that. But I think the role of academia has evolved beyond a professor sitting in his office, you know, in a corner in a building, just doing research and writing highfalutin scientific papers. Academic institutions now have to be relevant to societal needs. So I think more and more, again, we're trying to transform these perceptions of what academics should be like. So there's been a cohort of young academics who's been quite purposeful about breaking the stereotypes, breaking the mold, breaking the perceptions, and breaking the bridges between academia and society.
Do you find that, I like that. Do you find that a lot of students are active when it comes to knowing what's going on in the industry, or once they're going to leave the academic institution? Or do you find that the pressures of the academic program is all that they are focusing on? Because, I mean, with our generation, on weekends, during holidays, we used to work quite a lot in the various optometry practices. Are the current students still doing that? Because I find that that helped when we work in our final year already. We already knew that this is where I'm going to be working at. This is what's happening out there. Are the students currently still doing that?
You know, OB, sadly, not many. I did that as a student, and I fully agree with you. It's such a valuable learning experience. I've even had practitioners say to me that they'd much rather employ an accounting student or a nursing student, because our students, optometry students, somehow just don't value those experiences anymore. I'm not sure if it's because of what you said, that maybe they just feel too pressurized, or they're not yet at that level of motivation, or when they work in a practice, they see themselves, they don't want to be seen as a frontliner. They only want to work in a practice when they're the professional. I really don't know the reasons behind that, but very few are pursuing those sort of holiday employment, weekend employment opportunities that are out there. I mean, literally, I've gone into practices and seen all sorts of other students and not optometry students working as part-time staff, which is heartbreaking because they're losing out on such a valuable, experience to prepare them for practice. So that's the kind of thing we're trying to address, those gaps. You know, I've got a master's students now looking at practice readiness from the perspective of employers and the perspective of new graduates, and what are the gaps and how can we close them. And I'm hoping that some of these things will come out, the attitudinal barriers, that we can address those so that we give students the richest experience or opportunities to prepare them for a smooth transition into professional practice.
Definitely, because like you said earlier on, with regards mentorship, we need to encourage our students quite a lot, in the sense that when you're still studying and you, like you said, you've got an interest in pediatrics or low vision or sports, go and spend time in three or four different yes. types of optometry practices that specialize yes. in that, so that you're looking at the type of practice that is in an urban area. How does that function differently from that in a strip
mall? Absolutely. Mall?
And you get to have that experience and that encounter with a practice that has been functioning for 40 years versus one
Correct.
That has recently opened. You get to have a...
And what a... Yeah. That breadth of perspective, you know, and that helps you to choose where you want to go. Yeah. So absolutely.
Now, Dr. van Staden, obviously the world now is all about COVID-19 and mm-hmm. the impact it's having. Just as we're heading to a close with this podcast, how has the current lockdowns affected the academic program at the institution right now? And what does the rest of 2020 look like for the academic institution?
Thanks for that question, Obi. Such a critical one, and we're grappling with it on a daily basis. So institutions were shut down shortly before the lockdown. So we've been away for at least, more than 6 weeks now from the university, from a contact teaching environment.
Yes.
Universities have been trying to implement online teaching, which has its own sets of challenges because there are many students living in rural areas, not even just those living in rural areas, some even in urban areas, who don't have a laptop, who don't have access to data. So how do they access online teaching? The critical challenge, though, is if we lose too much time, we risk losing the academic year. In optometry, there's not too much we can do by way of simulation if we're trying to do clinical teaching or even sending the students videos on how to do a specific procedure. They need access to actual patients.
Yes.
So there's a meeting actually today. So there's discussions that are ongoing. When is it feasible to bring our students back? So even if we bring them back, let's say 1st of June, will we have access to patients? What would be the risks? Can we send them to hospitals? Will patients be willing to come to the university clinic? So COVID has just totally disrupted the way we're going to train for the rest of this year and possibly going forward. You know, the social distancing implications, how do we deal with that in a clinical training environment? It's now placed on us the need for PPE, you know, so making sure students have masks, gloves, gowns if needed, depending on what procedure they're doing.
Yes.
And those are cost implications. Universities are also cash strapped. Mm. I mentioned that right at the beginning, we need to look for opportunities. And I think this is an opportunity for optometry to own its space in the clinical arena. You know, previously, suddenly the medics have referred to optometry and other health science programs as allied or, you know, and seen us as almost non-clinical.
Yes, yes.
And we need to own our space in the healthcare arena. So these implications are for everyone who's dealing with a patient. And so the same challenges that we face, the medics will face, the physiotherapists will face.
That is true.
And so I think we need to now use this as an opportunity to say, as optometry, we have a much broader role to play beyond the one perceived by societies that we just, have a practice where we try to sell spectacles and contact lenses, and that our role is so much more critical in terms of clinical management. Because COVID, we know, early evidence is showing that it can present in the tears, so the eyes can be affected. And so it's not just about refractive error and managing disorders of the visual system. It's how systemic conditions impact eye health and healthcare in general. So yeah, it's we don't have all the answers, but we know that the way we practice and the way we train is going to be dramatically altered, when we find those revised models.
Now more than ever, we need to collaborate as different stakeholders, because you cannot, as the suppliers or the practicing optometrists, ignore the academic institutions, because those students are the next generation. We have Correct. To collaborate with each other as best as we possibly can in order to ensure that, like you say, as a profession, we protect the profession whilst at the same time
Absolutely.
Ensuring that we are addressing the eye care needs that are challenging our country right now.
Prevalent in our society. Absolutely. I can't stress that enough. I fully agree with you. In my 10 years as academic leader, that's something I've pushed for almost right from the beginning, is strengthening our relations with industry. We cannot operate in isolation from our stakeholders. We train for industry. We train for private sector employers. We have to work together for the good of the profession and for the good of optometric care that our patients will receive wherever they are. And I must say, I've been blessed that, I've had some successes in that regard, but I think we've got a longer way to go. We've managed to establish good relations with quite a number of stakeholder and industry representatives, but going forward, we need to really define our associations quite more solidly and more sustainably, so that it's not just one-off events, but we partner in optometry training and long-term practice, because our students are the optometrists of the future. So they're the market for the companies in future.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Dr. von Stadion, this has been very insightful. I believe it will be an injustice if we don't have you back on to come and talk about public health optometry. So I hope that we will make time very soon. I know you've got a very busy schedule, especially with the academic institutions and all the challenges that you're facing. I would love to talk to you about your journey with regards ending up becoming a doctor. We don't have a lot of doctors. I think that's also a conversation for another
that's
day.
That's definitely.
A lot of optometrists doubt how rewarding optometry still is, You've got multiple experiences with your optometric journey.
Absolutely.
You owe us two more podcasts.
I'll voluntarily agree.
What mentorship? We're going to start with you. But thank you very much.
I'll always pick my hand up. Pleasure, Obi. Thank you for your time and thank you for this opportunity just to share. I'm always passionate about the profession, and in any way that I can help, I'll definitely sacrifice my time.
No, thank you very, very much. That's it, everyone. Make sure you're subscribing to our platform on social media, iAfrica Media, the biggest podcast channel on the African continent for all things eye care. And that's a wrap for today. We're looking forward to the next one.